हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 Gaur Premanande. Since Mother Malati mentioned some pastimes to do with Bhaktivedanta Manor, it reminded me of what's for me a cherished time, not in the manor, but in London. During 1973 Ratha Yatra. Some of you were there? No? Uh-oh, we're from a different generation, I think. Yes. Yes, some of us. So Srila Prabhupada was present, and as you may know, generally when Srila Prabhupada would take part in Ratha Yatra, he liked to sit on Subhadra's cart, Lady Subhadra's cart. And that arrangement was made for him also for this Ratha Yatra in London. But as the procession began, Srila Prabhupada, I actually don't remember. I think he started up on the cart, but then he indicated he wanted to get down from the cart. What's happening? What's happening? They helped him down from the cart, and then the procession proceeded, and for the rest of the procession, Srila Prabhupada was dancing with his hands in the air like this and with tears flowing from his eyes. And what I could appreciate from seeing Prabhupada in this situation, well, a few things, but one was that he was experiencing Ratha Yatra as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experiences Ratha Yatra, or perhaps I should say he was experiencing Ratha Yatra as if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is present, where the rest of us were in our sort of clueless, joyous if clueless condition of, you know, just some joyful event going on. It's a parade, right? A happy parade. And we're chanting and dancing, and that's all very nice. But for Srila Prabhupada, there was a sense that he was so much beyond where we were in his recognition that all of this is possible. This Ratha Yatra in London, which, of course, was the capital of the British Empire. This is happening. Why? Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it possible, and that he, indeed, is still chanting and dancing before Lord Jagannath, that his pastimes with the Lord, with Lord Jagannath, are eternally going on. I want to start with a verse from the Sri Satchitanayam Ashtakam, which is attributed to Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. I'll just read the translation. It says, I prostrate myself before the son of Mother Sachi, whose radiant lotus face and body shine with the splendor of molten gold. This transcendental body is the playground for the continuous expression of variegated moods and ecstatic symptoms that carry his consciousness to the realm where he is no longer aware of that transcendental body. By only a particle of his mercy, he has delivered the three worlds. We have heard about the, you can say, purpose or motivation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in coming to this world. We have heard two accounts. There is a third account of the inspiration for coming, which perhaps we can also remember together, which begins in Vrindavan with Srimati Radharani and with Mother Yashoda thinking how wonderful it would be if Radharani would marry Krishna. And while thinking this, and while Radharani is with her, what does she do? All of a sudden, without any warning, she takes some kumkum and smears it on the hands of Radharani. What does that mean? Everyone knows what that means. And this is a terrible thing for Radharani, because it means she is engaged to be married. The moment anyone sees this, the village talk is going to begin. Everybody is going to be saying, "Ah, Radharani's getting married. Who's she getting married to?" And so it will go. And so terrified of this, because she doesn't want to lose her freedom. She's a small girl who likes to run about and just have a good time. Getting married, this is not on her mind. And so what does she do? The first thing she does, she goes to one kunda. I think it's called Pilukunda. Pili? Pilipukur, thank you. Yes, Pilipukur. And there she washes her hands. And she washes and she washes and she washes. And as she washes, the pukur becomes pili. It becomes yellow. And then she departs with her hands still quite yellow, because that's the way turmeric is. It doesn't wash off so quickly. But she continues on her way. Next scene. Krishna is searching for a stray cow. And where does he end up? He ends up at Pilipukur. And he looks and he notices there's something rather strange about this. It's all yellow. Well, he goes down to the side of the lake and he touches the lake. And when he touches it, he gets a jolt. Whoa, what's that? Touches it again. Like an electric shock. Something is going on here. That is very interesting. This feels good. And then he looks down into this lake and he sees his own reflection. His own reflection is completely yellow, golden. And in that state, what does he do? He dives into that lake. Hare Krishna. So in this way also we can understand Lord Chaitanya's appearance. We understand that, yes, there is an external purpose and an internal purpose. And we do hear that the external purpose is secondary to the internal purposes. It's one against three, you can say. And this is so wonderfully described in this chapter, which you read from chapter 4, Adi Lila. It's a wonderful study, by the way. I highly recommend. I was reading this chapter a few days ago. The entire chapter is a study of what is pure love. What is the quality of love? It's highly philosophical, so you have to kind of brace yourself. But it's well rewarded, because from reading this chapter, you get a sense, although we cannot understand the love of Radha for Krishna, still we get some bit of sense of what that is. And here is part of that explanation from the same chapter. This is verse 199 and 200 and 201. Prithivishayanande tat ashrayananda tahanahi nijya sukha vanchara sambandha. The happiness of the abode of love is in the happiness of the object of that love. This is not a relationship of desire for personal gratification. Nirupadi prema jaha taha eriti priti vishai sukhe ashrayer priti nija premanande krishna sevananda vadhe se anande prati bhakter hoy mahakrodhe. Whenever there is unselfish love, that is its style. The reservoir of love derives pleasure when the lovable object is pleased. When the pleasure of love interferes with the service of Lord Krishna, the devotee becomes angry toward such ecstasy. What kind of love is that? So yes, we hear about this external purpose of establishing the dharma of this age. And what is this dharma of this age? It is simply to chant the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But what does Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do when he is experiencing these deepest feelings of love in the mood of Srimati Radharani? What does he do? Well, one thing that he does is that he chants. What does he chant? Yes, he chants Jaga Jaga, but he also chants Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was trying to think of some analogy to help us to appreciate the connection between the external and the internal purposes of the Lord, because they're not antagonistic. Right? They're complementary. Well, one thought, for what it's worth, is like an iceberg. We have this saying, like the tip of an iceberg, something which implies that there is something so much bigger underneath that we do not see. We see the tip of the iceberg. We know, even if we don't see, what's underneath the water. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is what we see. How much of that mission do we see? But aside from that, how much more is there? This is what Krishnadas Kaviraj is, I think, trying to communicate to us, that there is so much more there in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's his own experience of love, but also his giving of love, his giving of Krishna Prema. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, is speaking in the first chapter about the preliminary teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says an interesting thing there, because he's giving what you might call a sort of survey of world religion. At the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this was of great concern in India, that there was this, so to say, new religion coming from Europe. And what do we make of this? And one thing that he says is that the different great founders of different religions have presented, have revealed different rasas. And he credits Jesus Christ as having established in the world the Vatsalya rasa. But then he says that Madhurya rasa is yet to be established beyond India. And he, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, anticipates that this will happen. So there's an interesting, something like a prediction that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making for the spread of the Krishna consciousness movement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, in that section, let's see if I can find it, is saying something quite interesting, which I think is relevant for all of us to consider in the context that we find ourselves, namely that still very few people in our communities, in our society, have some understanding or conscious understanding of what we are about. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about differences among different religious traditions, and this is then what he says, if I can read briefly. Because of these five differences, it is only natural that various religions will appear quite different. However, it is improper and detrimental to argue over these differences. If one goes to someone else's place of worship, one should think, quote, "The people are worshiping my Lord, but in a different way. Because of my different training, I cannot quite comprehend this system of worship. However, through this experience, I can deepen my appreciation for my own system of worship. The Lord is only one, not two. I offer respect to the form I see here and pray to the Lord in this new form, that he increase my love for the Lord in his accustomed form." Unquote. Those who do not follow this procedure, but instead criticize other systems of worship and show hatred, violence, and envy, are worthless and foolish. He speaks quite strongly. The more they indulge in useless quarreling, the more they betray the very goal of their religion. So I think one thing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is hinting at here is that people in different religious traditions, some more, some less, some in one way, some in another way, may also be doing what we would call kirtan, or indeed sankirtan. And the word, the prefix sum, comes from samyak, which can mean complete. It can also mean without any reservation. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that our process is to completely describe the Lord. This is Sankirtan. And so to not think of Sankirtan in a sectarian way, but rather to understand the invisible portion of the iceberg. Iceberg is maybe not the best analogy here. Excuse me for this, because ice is cold. But in any case, the invisible portion of the iceberg of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, we are in a position where we need to be vehicles for that mercy. And that means we have to be open fully for receiving and passing on that mercy, which means helping others to open up to the experience of love of God, which all human beings are meant to experience. This is Lord Chaitanya's mission. Too much people's impression of us is that we are some strange sect. Some, especially in the UK, they say, oh, those people are okay. They're nice. They're harmless. That's nice, but perhaps this could expand into a much more positive understanding of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is all about. Now, I want to beg for your indulgence for just, I think, 5 minutes to allow me to read something which I've written. I started writing this last night, and I finished it this morning, and it's a first draft, okay? And it's, I don't know what genre to put it in. It's somewhere between rap and and everything else. It's without the rhythm of rap, and it's also without the rhyme. But this is what I was inspired to write after reading chapter 4 of Adi Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, you may conclude after hearing this that I completely missed the point, which is fine. You can tell me afterwards that I better reread it. But here we go. You might want to mentally accompany this with your favorite rap music.
now you're talking.
Okay. Bear with me. The title of this is You Might Not Believe This. All right, here we go. He, that is, the one, but not exactly only primordial he, finding himself repeatedly running up against the exasperating fact of it, that she, that is, his better than mirror, better half counterpart, other as none else, had no love, except and save and only exclusively for him. A love so exclusive, so utter, so boundless, and bounding, and so awesomely leaping beyond the very notion of boundaries. He, seeming to encounter boundaries, he, as I said, exasperated, unable to fathom, to be within her being, her living that fathomless love, he made a plan, a grand and glorious scheme a divine, cosmic, supertemporal, yet time-entering resolve in and for just the right time, a time-entering resolve. You see, we're not talking about any ordinary Tom, Dick, and Harry guy stumbling lost and witless into this bozo circus of someone else's show of don't get me started fear and misery. No, we're talking about that bigger-than-life person neither you nor I can expect to just go and see on the TV, however we might try, however many channels we think we have, it being entirely up to him to whom and whether, if at all, he might be visible, he might reveal himself. Entirely up to him. I know there are those who would deny altogether any such a one, but we won't go there now with more and bigger things to say. What's bigger? You see, it's really all about relish. Not you, not I, can begin to venture into the vast waters of rasa. A little big Sanskrit word, R-A-S-A, rasa, relish, relish of divine devotion, that swirl and sway and whelm and overwhelm of the one, really the two we're talking of. We think, or think we think, we have better things to do when what is, what really is to be done, is to put our minds, our hearts, our everything in that ocean, that deep, sweet nectar ocean of rasa. It's for this nectar ocean of rasa that he, that mega fine person who has mega names, among which his closest friends call him Krishna, the all-attractive one, for experiencing even more fully than he would normally as himself this rasa of total, boundless love of her, that ultra-fine, complimentary person who has ultra-names, among which her closest friends call her Radha, the best of beloveds. For her, he comes here, descends, not exactly from the clouds, but from his home that makes our notions of home into rank imitation. He comes here for her, for Radha. That Krishna comes, descends, sets up, makes place. It is here he comes, to this spinning top of a planet, this chunk of, you name it, 10,000 temporary things that come and go, plants, animals, people that come and go, remembered a while, then forgotten, hankered for, lamented for, fought over, died because of. It is here he comes, not for anything else, but for Radha. No, not exactly for Radha, but as Radha. As she who is the unplumbed deep of love. The vessel that is the storehouse, the primordial warehouse of every possible and every beyond possible shades and variations on perfectly, artfully, tastefully enacting and enacted love there could ever be. As the vessel of love rather than the object of love, as the subject of love rather than the object of love, and you will still be right to ask for the why of it. And that is just the point. It is about why. There is purpose, a point to it. And we, you, me, all and every one and many and all of us who are the tiniest of beings who are but infinitesimal traces of that one complete being with whom we become complete. The why of us becomes unveiled within the why of Krishna's coming, within his becoming the vessel, the subject of perfect, unending, expanding love. In becoming the subject, experiencing what is the glory of Radha's love for Krishna, Krishna comes for us, comes to share with us the unboundedness, the way, the broad, yet straight and narrow way that, though straight, circles, orbits, brings us to our proper place, place of being, becoming, with him, her, her, him, Radha, Krishna. He comes for us, gives himself, gives his names, invites, welcomes, quote, just speak out my names, uplift your voice, sound the call out my names, allow your heart to open to these names, which are us, Radha and Krishna, names whom we are so very fond of hearing, names who bring us running to you, who call, names who bear the original meaning of the word name, unquote. Okay, you might not believe this. I know it sounds far-fetched, but I didn't make it up. Nor did any off-the-street guy dream this up. I know it's out there, and it's easy to let it slide. But I say, give it a good hearing. That's what it's about, beginning for the first time in our lives to hear what's going on. So on this day, let's give it a go. It's his birthday, the day we know him as Chaitanya, as Gauranga, as the Golden Avatara. On his birthday, we actually prefer to call it his appearance day. You're invited to check out these names, the names of Krishna, of he who is the source of all joy, Rama, of she who is the very being of divine love, Radha, voiced as Hare. Do give it a try, and you just might find there's something to it, something that is a lot more than something, which is, who is someone? The one who's in your heart, the one waiting for you, waiting for your love, the one who are two, ever separated, yet united. Give it a try and see for yourself. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Gaur Premanande.